Ever watch any King of the Hill, Ethan?
Hank Hill's great.
I do know. Do I look like I know what a JPEG is?
What kind of a sick bastard runs a water pipe through a wall stud without installing a nail guard?
That's really good. That is. Dang.
Warm up lab.
Speaking of warm up lab, what are we warming up our bellies with tonight? So we've got. Tyler brought some Bardstown.
Yes, it's the Bardstown. I think it's their like 100% wheat.
Mm.
Or it's just their wheat
so
whiskey.
It's not bourbon.
A weeded bourbon whiskey. No, this is 53% corn, 39% wheat. So it's pretty high wheat.
Nice. Nice for the bourbon snobs out there. Ethan and I are drinking Cosmopolitans.
Cosmopolitans. Tell the folks at home what a Cosmopolitan is, Doug.
Sparkling water, organic 100% cranberry juice. Lime juice and a little bit of orange juice concentrate.
Ooh.
Yeah. Very healthy. Very, very Let's healthy.
Go. I had one before the show.
I know.
Felt great.
Do you like agave?
I do.
Yeah.
If it needed to be sweetened, that's what I would use. But yeah. I think this is just fine. I like it a little bit tart.
No, it's a good time. As my taste buds have aged and probably been burned off by all the high proof whiskey I've consumed, I find tart things, I enjoy them a lot more. So a lot of things are way too sweet for me now.
Mm-hmm.
Do you not like candy?
It's like a little treat and I'll like binge, like I'll eat a box of Mike and Ike's and in the moment it is glorious, but really 5 minutes after the box is gone, I feel like trash and my tummy hurts, my teeth hurt. So
self-control is key.
Yeah, so I just don't do it. I don't drink soda much anymore at all.
Wow.
I haven't drank soda in 20 years.
It's
the evil. I am not anti-big corporation, but I feel like Coca-Cola is probably the worst company in America in terms of the overall impact to society.
Yeah.
I saw something the other day, yesterday I think it was, that Coca-Cola was approaching, I think it was 1.9 billion pounds of plastic waste.
Oh, goodness.
They've contributed. But the stuff in the plastic, as if the plastic wasn't bad enough for the world, Coke is terrible for you. All soda is. Like, yes. Not only the sugar content, but all the other chemicals that are rotting your teeth and your gut. And like,
it's true.
It's terrible for us.
They should have never taken the cocaine out.
I don't know, Ethan. Let's take a step back. I don't
it all
know.
Went downhill after that, guys.
I'm not sure that's the point that we were making.
No.
But we should maybe talk after the podcast.
So no. If you get addicted to mocktails with Coke in them, would you be a non-alcoholic? All right, welcome back officially to Switchcast Season 5. I'm your host, Doug Tabbitt, here with my co-host, Tyler Sanders, and our producer, Ethan Huffnagel. We are the automotive news and entertainment show that's not just for car people, as you just found out.
Yeah.
Tonight, we are getting almost political. I've said since the beginning, we will not talk politics unless it is car related. And boy, have we gone deep sometimes off the cliff, off the deep end. Speaking of that, mixing metaphors, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh. I read this week that there's a Ford executive that has been chronicling mixed metaphors and like literary foibles. In team meetings and stuff like that for the past like 30 years.
Oh, nice.
Yes. It's great. I would love to, like, I hope he publishes that.
I like the ones they say on purpose, like, it's not rocket surgery. Like, yes. I like to say it like that kind of, because it's kind of funny. Like,
Michael
I say
Scott
it on
isms.
Yeah. Like, oh, so good. But
cut off your hand to spider face.
Yeah. Can I ask you this one real quick? Mm-hmm. I had a professor in college and he would whenever someone like answered the question the way that he wanted them to, he would always say, "You hit the nail in the coffin." That one always
so
drove
close.
Me insane.
Did that joke die with him? Here at Switchcast, we often say that we're never the first to report the news, but that our tardiness usually comes with a little bit of extra snark and some extra context, usually. Now, we wanted to be early in the discussion on the tariffs, and in doing so, we did miss some very important context. The episode was initially filmed on Tuesday, April 1st. On Wednesday, April 2nd, it was announced that with the first draft of the new law, that it would specifically exclude vehicles 25 or more years old from the new 25% tariffs. Obviously, that is going to change our opinions and conclusions in some of the upcoming discussion. We wanted to obviously tell you that ahead of time, because if not, you all would jump in the comments and tell us how wrong we were and how we didn't understand the law, and that would have been valid. But we did not have this additional context when we went to studio. We believe that that's a very important update. We're very happy that that exclusion is in place because, again, if the point of the law is to bring manufacturing back to the U.S., what does it matter about vehicles that are 25 years old? So we're very happy. Old classic cars will only be subject to the 2.5% import duty that we're used to, not the additional 25%. Again, thank you for watching, and we hope you enjoy the episode, despite some inaccuracies that may be in the upcoming discussion.
Let's talk tariffs.
Ooh, all right.
Yes.
There it is.
So many people have expressed strong opinions, asked me what I think, asked if we're going to talk about it on the podcast. I don't know why, because I am not a history buff, and certainly tariffs are something that have root in history, and the best way to interpret the present is to look at the past, or those who forget the past are doomed to repeat it, as I believe some really smart guy who might have been a president or something said. I know the quote. I just don't know who said it. Okay, so boy, oh boy. I am no economist, disclaimer up front, but I did take half of an Economics 101 class in college. And I've read at least 4 books and a weekly or monthly publication on economics, not pronunciation. And it has been said that if anyone reads 3 books on a subject, they can be considered an expert.
That's a low number of books. Are we talking like 1,000-page textbook?
I think that's true. Like,
really?
You read one book, for the most part, you know a lot about the subject. But that one book could be super biased. So if you read 3... you probably know a lot more, especially in this day and age of social media, where people are literally getting their quote unquote facts from sound bites and memes that are like 100 characters or less. Like, you can't have a coherent thought about a subject as deep as tariffs or anything that has to do with global economic policy or anything like that. You cannot unpack that in 30 seconds.
Well, and I feel like if you can unpack something in 30 seconds, it's probably not worth that much deep discussion because it is so basic and surface level. But the problem is all of the shorts and the TikToks and whatevers are like trying to seem really smart. We've talked about this before with one of the Scaminator things of like somebody sounded so smart.
Well, they're all trying to be mic drops. Basically,
yeah.
Like, oh, boom, this is the way to think of it. And if you don't think of it this way, you're an idiot. And
yeah,
like, this
100%.
Just solves everything. Like, oh my gosh, I know all these people up in Washington drafted 800-page laws about this, but man, check out my 120-character tweet. That just ends it.
The world is a complicated place, ladies and gentlemen.
It absolutely is. And we are not claiming that we know what's going to happen or that we get to the end of this and like this will be the answer, that we're right. I think we have some good perspective on it. We've read some good opinions. I've consulted some people in the industry and just brought my own opinion. Tyler's got his opinion. So let's dig into it. We're going to look at this a little bit differently than, of course, the automotive or the mass market media is, mainstream media, MSM. We're going to look at this in terms of the car industry, but more specifically, we're going to look at it in terms of the specialty luxury and collector car industry, because that's kind of where our podcast focuses. We will look at it in terms of just the general scope of how it affects people and the automotive market and car dealers, but a lot of people, and the first questions I got asked were, is the collector car market going to skyrocket as a result of the tariffs?
Doug, it's like you knew what I was going to ask you when we were all whiskeyed up after the podcast today. I've got money burning a hole. Just not enough money yet.
Tyler wants to buy a 996 GT3. Are these tariffs going to affect his desire? So I'll say first off the bat, yes and no. if you want to buy a Mark 1 GT3 and import it from Europe,
oh yeah,
you just got screwed. Probably, right? Because one of the questions I initially had is, are these tariffs going to affect pre-owned cars? Because the point of them, at least as expressed by our president, was to bring manufacturing back to the U.S., right? So why would it affect used cars, especially 25-year-old cars that you're importing? Like, that shouldn't be a thing. Laws shouldn't apply. Just like emissions tests. Like, by 25 years old, it's such a small percentage of the market, it shouldn't matter. Just no laws. No registration, nothing. Just let us drive them.
Let me drive what I want.
All the Altimas do that anyway. But for the 996.2 GT3s, I don't think it's going to affect it one bit. And my initial response when people said this was, dear gosh, I hope not. Because the collector car market is already so inflated, in my opinion, so crazy, so driven by hype, that for it to have another reason to skyrocket in value, like, it's just going to price so many people out.
Like, I just got to pray, and it's not even like for my own selfish, like, part of it is my own desires of what I would like to achieve in terms of a car. But it's also to that point, how expensive is literally everything else going to get if 20-year-old, 25-year-old enthusiast cars just go with everything else like they did a few years ago? That just makes the thoughts of the growing car community and younger people. I feels weird saying younger people. I'm not old, but still, just like it would kill a lot of that. So I really hope that does not happen.
The long and short of it is somebody has to absorb the cost. So either our market goes way up in the U.S., which we are already the primary buying market for Europe and Japanese. I should know what I'm saying before I start my enunciation.
I think that's a good skill for being a podcast host, Doug. It you should is. Work on that.
Yes, cohesive thoughts.
Yes, Ethan, can we get some training? Can we get Japanese. Some webinars? Can we?
So if we've driven the market in Europe and Japan for quite a while because we've just been gobbling up importing cars like crazy, and so they've raised their prices accordingly. So either U.S. buyers have to decide that they're willing to pay that much more, or the European and Japanese classic market is going to tank.
Oh.
Because they've been pricing their cars based on the U.S. demand. Because, and we discussed this on an old podcast about, you know, the potential arbitrage of importing cars from overseas. Some places there's great opportunity, but in general in the European market there isn't, because they've brought their prices up. Well, that's only the case for cars that are eligible to be brought over here.
Yes.
Cars that are not. 10-year-old Aston Martins are half price in Europe, which tells me that the overall market in Europe is vastly different than it is here. So if their market is driven by our buyers, then we're going to determine the market. And I don't think the buyers have the stomach for that much of a price increase, because cars have been going up in value so much essentially since COVID. There's been a couple corrections, but in a lot of segments, they're still at record highs, all-time record highs. Personally, I've kind of had enough. I'm out. I've considered myself priced out of a lot of cars that I wanted. So I think the European market is going to take a massive hit as a result of this from a collector car standpoint. I told my wife, actually, and I think this summarizes it pretty well. I said, it's not the collector cars that'll be impacted. It's the 2-year-old mom mobiles. So I told her, I said, this week, your 2021 Mazda went up in value more than my Lamborghini Diablo.
Well, that's what's going to be so interesting, because I've been following the market, obviously, on 996 GT3s for quite a while now, because I'm interested. I'm also going to be helping my girlfriend purchase a new car, which will be a, used but a couple year old vehicle, doesn't really matter what it is, I expect that price to increase a little bit. We had like a window in mind and just things didn't make sense. I don't believe there is a reason to make a rash financial decision because of this, because you could put yourself in a bad place, which I have resisted doing a couple of times now. But it'll be interesting to see what that effect is. And I'm a little nervous because she needs a new car, but we'll see how much extra.
Sure. So, and we're going to make this a double header. I want to circle back to that.
Okay. Well, and we should the appliances.
I want to talk about the kind of the regular segment of the market in the second half, and we'll keep going on collector cars. But that's a very good thought, because people are going to say, should I buy a car now? Should I wait?
Yes.
And I think I have a pretty good idea, but
well, back to the collector car thing. So obviously, in our like friend groups, we've been talking about this a lot. We've got a lot of car enthusiasts as friends. Very shocking. One of our friends, Morgan, said, is this going to be the death of the GT3 flippers? If you are importing a car and have to pay another 25%, I don't know. I don't follow the new GT3 market that well, but I'm sure that is a massive chunk of the additional value you'd get for selling it.
It depends what the manufacturers do.
Mm.
There has always been a possibility to end flipping. When we're talking about flipping, we're talking about new cars. When people buy them from the dealership at MSRP or a markup and then sell them, flip them for more. I told Porsche in 2008 when they called me and said, you shouldn't do this. This is immoral because you're not a Porsche dealer. I said, I am just fixing your supply and pricing issues. Mm. I said, if you price the GT3 RS for 40 to 50 grand more and sent 90% of them to Los Angeles and Miami, oversimplification, but I said, I would be out of a job. We wouldn't be having this conversation. I'm buying them at your sticker price from dealers in a region that nobody is buying. And this was 2008. Like, the internet was somewhat ubiquitous, but it wasn't as easy a market, right? Like right now there's no borders, right? With social media and everything. But back then, like, people didn't think to call a small market dealer in New York to get a GT3 RS. I just thought to do that. And they were like, yeah, we're getting one. We don't have anyone for it.
So, and they're happy to move it, because if it's just going to sit, that's money that they've paid to the manufacturer. And so, like, okay, let's just get it, give it to this guy. Who cares?
Right. Right. So, maybe it'll stop flippers, maybe not. Like, Porsche could do that anyway and just say, well, we're going to price our GT3s higher. There's a lot of things that could undo flippers. But that's always a short-term market anyway, because it's like, well, there's this model that's hot and then we move on.
Yes. Constantly chasing the high.
Yes. Here's one of my concerns. Oh, I'll get back and say back to the 996 GT3 market. I've heard of two transactions. I actually bid both of them on 996 GT3s this week, low mile cars. They went for strong money, but nothing out of the ordinary. The 996 GT3 market has been a little bit weak lately, honestly, compared to what it was a couple years ago. And they did not exceed what any of them sold for in like 2022.
Well, so what I have noticed too, is that there are a couple of dealers that get really good spec, really low mile cars, and they price them boldly, I will say. And there was one that recently ran on P car market.
7,000 mile car.
Yeah.
Seal gray, no sailed at 133.
And they have it listed on Deal Tank at 175.
Correct.
And that, so there's a lot of uncertainty. There's, for me personally, there's a lot of like, what's going to happen? Oh my God, have I missed my chance because I've been too picky, or I wanted to be too financially conservative, whatever. But then I see things like that and I'm like, oh no, I'm fine.
Well, like, it's the dealers driving them up. That's the thing.
Yeah.
And that's what goes back to what I said at the start, is I hope, and I don't think that the collector car market will be greatly impacted by these. There will be some impacts. There will always be some impacts, but not a massive impact, because the dealers are already hoarding these cars and purposefully trying to drive the market up. When you ask $175K, when there's no recent transactions to support that, I got to tell you, I know of another similar mileage car that sold close to the P car market bid price, nowhere near the deal tank price. So,
and that at least like shows to me that the market is saying something different than people who could benefit from driving hype and driving scarcity around these cars or any of them. This is just the market I hyper fixate on because I want one, but
however, people operate on fear, right? So when the market was going up the past few years, people would buy, and I was guilty of this. I bought a Diablo as a hedge because I wanted one anyway. And I was just like, I have to make a move now or else I'll probably get priced out. And it was a good thing. But people operate on fear. And when you have dealers snapping up everything on the market and driving the price up, that kind of is a self-fulfilling prophecy because then people go, you know, it's a scarcity mindset. I can't find it, so I have to do it. And at the same, on the same token, perception is reality.
Yeah.
So if every car guy believes that the collector car market is going to skyrocket as a result of these tariffs, then it is because they're going to operate based on fear, right? It's the same reason when stuff happens in the world, the stock market takes a nosedive, right? As a result of one thing. And it's like, well, those companies didn't lose value overnight. They didn't lose revenue overnight. It's just people are making rash decisions based on fear, and that drives the market. So
it's like the stock market is just one big vibe check. Things ain't good. Number go down.
Now it's the car market, the collector car market, because it's seen as an asset class. So that the people see them as investments, they think differently. If they were just cars, then it's like, yeah, well, whatever. I'm going to keep driving it.
But I mean, we're not, we talk about this and it's very easy to pontificate about all this stuff, but I have no less than I think three times reconsidered trying to pursue a car that's on the market that I think is a little too expensive for what I want because I have that fear. And so I keep running the numbers and every time I do, I'm like, okay, no, that doesn't make sense. I'm able to exercise that restraint of no, I shouldn't, even though I could maybe, but it's, that fear is real. And I'm just like constantly thinking of this all the time, as I'm sure a lot of our listeners are.
Absolutely. I would say don't give in to the fear. I don't believe that overall the collector car market will really be impacted. There will be slight movements here and there. Obviously, there's a trickle down effect, right? If just like when COVID happened, new cars were in short supply, right? So what did people do? Bought used cars. And that drove all of the market because there was less new cars coming in. Well, actually, no, that's not the case because Porsche made record numbers of cars. So, you know, we thought there was less cars, but in actuality, there was, I think, 8 million less cars on the US market because of COVID. So that drives used car pricing and that all affects, right? So, but I don't think anything's going to double because of this or go up 25%. I think there's going to be little price movements, mostly probably late model stuff, but like a 25-year-old Porsche, why is it going to be affected, right? Other than the import tax from another country. But in all actuality, because there's so many cars here, I think that the other countries' markets are going to tank rather than our market skyrocketing. So it's going to be bad for Europe, bad for Canada. Canada's exchange rate already sucks. So really bad.
And there was a car up there I considered buying. That would suck to try to bring in with duty after that.
You would have had to get it in like, before yesterday. Yes.
Yeah. Whoo, dodged a bullet.
Yep.
What do you think about the hyper expensive Ferrari F50s? There's not a lot of those. You got to bring them in. Like, are those going to increase because now those in the U.S. will have to pay that extra price?
The Ferrari F50 is already $5 to $6 million.
Imagine 25%, $5 to $6 million.
So,
yikes!
And it was like $3 million a few years ago. So I don't know where it goes from there. I mean, obviously the Ferrari supercars are just going to only go up forever because you're buying status and place within the Ferrari hierarchy. And Ferrari's just built an incredible
brand
scam there. It's only a scam because I can't afford to participate yes. in it. Okay, let's be honest.
But, disclaimer.
But if I could, I wouldn't anyway, because you're literally buying stuff in order to gain status, in order to buy stuff, in order to have status, in order to buy stuff, in order to have status. And like, who are you trying to prove it to? Ferrari? Like, I'm with Jay Leno, right?
Yeah.
So, I would buy an F50 though. That would be it. It's a good question. I think that market is just so on its own that it's not going to be affected by this. Again, I think the sellers are going to have to take it on the chin on this one. That's my guess. That's my guess. Obviously, there's going to be a little bit of both, but rather than U.S. cars in the U.S. going up in value 25%, I think cars not in the U.S. are going to take the majority of the hit. I'm gonna stand on that. That is my prediction for all ends of the collector car market.
No, I think that makes a ton of sense, because if they're, you know, I see, again, the market I follow all the time, when I see cars listed in Europe, or especially in the UK for some reason, maybe it's because they're all right-hand drive and that's just less desirable from a global perspective.
Correct.
The prices are significantly cheaper for like really nice cars.
Yep.
And I'm
even
like,
even in Japan, right-hand drive cars that are not JDM are less desirable.
Really?
It's a status thing to have a left-hand drive European car in Japan.
Oh.
So, yeah, right-hand drive. Sorry, Queen.
Ooh, it's, and like, what's going to happen to, like, Skylines? You have to import those. There's probably a bunch here already, especially the GTSTs, so all the, like, never mind. So all the,
it's going
like,
to suck for the people who bought hordes of them and just left them in Japan.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people who've done that, or they shipped them into Canada because Canada has a 15-year exemption. So they shipped them there and just left them there so they could just bring them across the border here.
Like, what cars are coming that aren't legal in the US yet that are just sitting in Canada right now?
Anything built 2001 yes. or after.
Oh no.
Like, yeah, that's going to suck for some people. That's going to really suck. So, all right. Well, let's take a half segment break. When we come back, we're going to dive more into the actual declaration that President Trump gave and how it's going to affect more of the mass market, car dealers, new cars, and late model econo boxes. Let's
appliances,
say.
Although washing
there's
machines.
No econo boxes anymore.
Yeah, I think the Mitsubishi Mirage is the only one, and it's generally
Mitsubishi
just.
Mitsubishi still makes cars?
I think it's a pretty trash from what I know. It uses like wheelbarrow wheels instead of actual car wheels.
It has a rubber band to toothpick powering it. Our ever popular license plate game, affectionately nicknamed Plate to Sample. Yep, we will read off a license plate and the other person has to guess, not what it means, because we know that, but what kind of car it's on. How predictable are people's pedanticisms?
It's
a Michael Scott word right there.
I love all of the submissions. Thank you so much, everybody. This is not against the submissions. This is just what I see in real life. A lot of people spend a lot of money on vanity plates that are just kind of dumb. Like, I pay so much more attention now. My girlfriend pays so much more attention to try to, like, you know, if I see one, I'd like to bring it up. But my gosh.
Well, speaking of that, I'll start you off with one that I was going to say that exact commentary on. This should be an easy one. Red Rari.
Oh, is it a Ferrari? That's
yes.
red.
Yes, it is.
Oh, my goodness. Ooh, that would be, I want to get try to guess the model. That would go on a 360.
No, 458.
Oh.
All right. Yes. I mean, if you're putting the model of your car on your vanity plate, just should be a ban on that.
The green Z3 that I saw locally here around us was my favorite on very obviously a green Z3. It's like, come on, man.
Here's a good one. Y-S-O-F-C-E-R. Yes, officer.
Oh, Nissan GTR.
No.
Oh.
No.
Mustang.
No, Lamborghini Huracan Spider. Papa Bull.
Papa Bull. Is this also a Lamborghini? Is this an Aventador?
No, a Mercy. It's a Countach.
Oh, nice. Come on. Ooh, Papa. Oh, I get it. I like that. That's right. Good.
UFO low.
UFO. Oh, this is a Stance Nash vehicle.
No.
This is no. UFO low. I don't even know what that means.
De Tomaso Pantera.
How is that? What does that mean?
It looks like a UFO and it's on the ground.
I guess so. I was thinking it was going to be somebody with like Ferrari object is what it looks like from a distance a little bit. But sure. You know.
let's see. Lap time.
GT3 RS.
No.
GT2 RS.
No.
Dang it.
Viper ACR with the extreme aero package.
I was in the right vein.
All right. GRT ASP. Great ASP.
ASP.
I personally like this one.
ASP means something. It's like related to the car, isn't it? ASP.
I thought this would be a gimme.
I don't know. What is it? I'm embarrassed.
You don't know what an ASP is?
No.
It's a snake.
Oh, is it like a Shelby?
No, GT? It's a Viper GTS.
Oh, so many Vipers.
All right. Yo Mamba.
Yo Mamba. Is that a Mamba Green Porsche?
No. What? It's a Mamba Edition Viper SRT.
What the heck?
Plot car.
Clot car?
Plot. Plot car. P-L-O-T. Plot car.
What is a plot car?
I don't know.
Oof. I don't even really.
It's a Viper SRT. These
How many Viper
people.
Did you see?
I was at the Celebration Exotic Car Festival. Spoiler alert. There's a lot of license plates. Most of them on Vipers.
Wow.
All right. T.Y. Grandma. Thank you, Grandma.
A Viper.
No.
Son of a, is it a Buick Century?
No. It's a 1965 or 66 Mustang, and the guy got it from his grandmother's estate and restored it himself.
Nice. I like that story.
Great story. I love and hate this play at the same time. It's Travis Bell's pet peeve. MOTV8TD. Motivated.
Oh, because they do the
eight and the T, because eight doesn't end in a T sound.
Motivated.
Motivated.
That's somebody who's got a TikTok that tells people how to make money, and they have a Lamborghini Huracan.
No, Ferrari 458 Spider. I did not check their TikTok.
I guarantee you they have one.
All right. Last two, RX Toy. Now, I don't know if the guy's name is Rick, and it's Rick's Toy, or if he was prescribed this.
I think this is a prescription toy, which is probably a Porsche.
Nope.
Dang it. That seemed kind of like a, is this a Ferrari?
Nope.
Is it a Lamborghini?
Nope.
What the heck?
Aston Martin V8 Vantage Volante, or Roadster, sorry. Six-speed manual in burgundy.
Ooh,
my color.
Dan Doucette would like to know your location.
Before you flip the script on me here. Not a spy.
Oh, this is an Aston Martin, probably a DB5.
Nope.
Is it a DBS?
Nope.
Vantage or Vanquish?
Nope.
Vanquish.
Nope.
Well, what?
A DB9,
oh.
Which was not in any James Bond movie, but the DBS was, so I'll give him pass.
Yeah, the DBS is just a...
I was going to get Not Jim on my DB9.
I like that. That's good.
All right.
Alrighty, you ready? I've got Ravioli with a 4 for the A.
Oh, Toyota RAV4.
Yes, dang it.
I was going to guess an Italian car until you told me the 4.
Dang it. Oh, I shouldn't have said that. I got to tilt the scale in my favor. I got to make you struggle. In debt.
Oh, I'm Mercedes.
It is.
These are so easy. Mercedes are the Nissan Altima of vanity plates. Like
it is.
We've seen so many of these.
It's a late model
E-class.
It's
like a Mercedes GT. What did you say it was?
It's a late model E-Class. I couldn't tell.
I was
it was like
try
a
guess the yeah, yeah. It's always a late model something that's not a very good Mercedes, but they
yeah. It's like why
they
did
try
you,
to brag on their plate.
Why did you go into debt for this? So rad.
That could be anything.
Yes.
19
It's very specific.
Is it a Geo Tracker?
It is not.
Is it an Isuzu?
It is not.
Nissan.
Negative.
Okay.
It is a Celine Fox body.
Ooh.
Which is
a good one.
So good.
That's a good one. I like that a lot. Love
Celine or Saline Fox bodies.
Celine.
Yummy is the next one.
Oscar Mayer Wienermobile. Yeah.
I thought you would have forgotten.
No.
Oh, man. Whew. All right. Last one.
You didn't think I would catch up to that game, did you?
No, I was hoping the little bit of a break would have been enough for it to just skip
your
mind.
Sorry, I mustered up the mental fortitude to bring that one back.
Oh, man. All right. Last one. Ain't real with an eight.
It's a Cobra kit car.
No, sort of close, but no.
Ferrari kit car.
It is a Porsche Speedster kit car.
Ooh.
Which I feel like I see a lot of, because the 356 Speedster is such a gorgeous car.
Right.
But they're unobtainium. This one did not have the stupid hips on it, though, which I appreciate. I see so many of them with dumb, muscly, hips. Ruins the bathtub shape.
I kind of like the wide body 356 fankies.
Oh, not a fan. Ugh, get out of here.
Just not with the lame rims. Like, they got to have proper rims. Not
big old chrome
style. Yeah. Yep. All right. We'll be back in a moment with more on tariffs. More on tariffs. It might be Freudian slip there. That's how some people feel about them.
Nuts for Sticks is a brand celebrating the manual transmission in all its forms. So forget those flappy paddles, because we like shifting ourselves. Check out our fun and funny stick-themed shirts at nutsforsticks.com and save 10% on your order using the discount code SWITCHCAST. That's nutsforsticks.com and use code SWITCHCAST.
All right, round two. Let's talk tariffs and how they're going to affect the regular car industry. Forget collector cars. To start with, let's read. It's very long, but let's skim over the White House proclamation. Started in 2019 when the initial tariffs were considered. And of course, they were just enacted as a result of an executive order here. The funniest thing I found, maybe it's not funny, I found it funny, is if you were to read this entire proclamation and play a drinking game anytime threat to national security came up, you would die of alcohol poisoning before you got to the end.
I did, and this is purely an opinion on what the words that were in there. That was in there more than the whole save American manufacturing thing. it was all just that is a load bearing reason for this whole thing, is the national security business.
And let me be honest, if we're going to use a Porsche analogy, I feel like the threat to national security is the IMS bearing of this whole
thing.
Hold
on a second now, Doug.
I just don't buy it, right? Okay. I understand that during COVID, the whole global manufacturing thing was an issue. Supply chain was an issue. But it was an issue for luxury items for the most part. It was an issue because people couldn't get their heated seats optioned in their top trimline Cadillac Escalades.
Yeah.
Every country dealt with that because we are a global economy, right? There's no advanced economy in today's world that is an island, right? We all rely on other countries for manufacturing, for shipping, for all sorts of different things, for produce, for you name it.
Isn't Australia just a really big island though?
We're all really big islands, Tyler. All of them. It's called a continent. Anyway, jeez. It's actually a really small island in the grand scheme of things. why you gotta distract us like that? Gosh darn it. Trying to produce a real podcast here. So, yes, but because of national security, not primarily apparently because we need to bring manufacturing back to the U.S., which I have an opinion on that as well. There is an ad valorem, according to value tariff, of 25% that applies to any automobile not manufactured in the U.S. As I read this and as I have spoken with other people, it is new or used. So for people importing cars, especially dealers that like to buy cars from Canada, this is a very big deal.
Is that a common practice for cars that are essentially this, like they have a North American specification that is, you know, not 25 years old? Can you bring in like an appliance car, like a Corolla from Canada? Okay.
Yep. There, some of them are optioned slightly differently and you have to get a letter of compliance, but it's very easy. All North American spec cars are North American spec. So I'm friends with a dealer. So Chris Benvey of McGovern Auto was very helpful. In his opinion, they own, I believe, 26 different brands and multiple stores in those brands. They have foreign and domestic brands. So he had a really good perspective on it. He's up on all this stuff. But they import 300 or so cars from Canada every month.
Whoa.
So this is a massive deal.
Holy moly.
Massive deal. And obviously that market can change at any point with the exchange rate. 20 years ago, I was selling cars to Canada like crazy because the demand was high up there and the exchange rate was better for them. However, like the tariffs thing isn't new for other countries. I lose a lot of deals to Canada or have lost a lot of deals because their import tax is like 13 to 15%. Ooh. So buyers up there just have to consider that when they're bringing them in. We only have a 2.5% duty on pre-owned cars historically. So in some sense, it's just kind of evening the playing field. Now, 25% is, you know, a little bit more.
That's a bigger number.
But I mean, people in Australia are laughing, right? If they want to import a car, it's close to 100%.
Whoa.
And there's a lot of other small countries that are similar.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
I'm sorry for all the car enthusiasts in Australia. Yep. I mean, yep. You got the V8 Falcons, but you shouldn't have to pay this much.
So as much as we see this as a shock because it happened all at once, this is nothing new under the sun for a lot of other countries. A lot of people are used to these kinds of massive tariffs on importing used cars that are not, you know, their specific domestic market.
Which, like, I don't understand, regardless of either of the reasons that whether it's written in the thing or it's what's being, you know, thrown around, I don't understand how a used car falls under that reasoning. I think it's, you know, we're flirting with not, you know, stuff we don't want to talk about, but I find that interesting.
Talk about it, right? We said we don't talk about politics unless it's related to cars. This is very political and it's very much car related. Cars are at the center of this.
I just don't see how the used car portion of this is anything other than a way to drive people to buy new American cars, which kind of goes in line with some of the other reasonings, but it's the same way that I feel about how Ohio treats sales tax considering trade-ins on used cars. You know, if you trade in a car towards a used vehicle, you still have to pay the whole sales tax, where in a lot of other states that actually reduces the amount of that you pay in the final purchase price in sales tax. So if you trade in a car worth $40,000 on an $80,000 car, you only pay $40,000 sales tax on the $40,000.
Correct. That's a very good analogy that I did not think of.
Pulling my weight, Ethan.
No, that's a perfect analogy. And the law is written in Ohio so that people will buy new cars. It's to benefit the new car dealers.
Yes.
And the supposed point of this tariff is to benefit American brands, right? Make America great again, bring manufacturing back. But approximately 50% of all cars sold in the United States are manufactured here. Now, media outlets are touting this as like, oh, more than 50% are not manufactured here. It's very small amount more. So you could also say like almost half are made here. That's a pretty darn big number.
With how many cars that we consume as a society, that is a ton.
Right, right. Interestingly enough, too, the percentage of U.S. sales imported. So on one end of the spectrum, you have Volvo and Mazda, between 80 and 90% of their cars are imported. And on the other end of the spectrum, you have Ford at about 20%. So there's no zeros. Honda is at 40% imported. Stellantis is just above them, and General Motors is just above them, right?
So what are you telling me about American manufacturers, Doug?
Well, we've known this for a long time. BMW, Toyota, Honda have plants here. They're making a lot of cars here. Now, what's interesting and yet to be seen is the specifics on how the parts tariffs are going to affect this. Yes. Because in the declaration, it says that they are going to essentially finalize this tariff, and that will be finalized by May 3rd, 2025. And they may change them or not change them prior to that. And a lot of American companies, again, we are in a global economy. A lot of American companies and companies manufacturing cars here are assembling cars here. So even if you say, well, it's going to bring manufacturing here, it's not going to bring all manufacturing here. So there's going to be a cost across the board to all manufacturers, regardless if they have an American brand name on the door or if they have a manufacturing facility here. It's all going to affect the cost. And the cost is going to be passed on to consumers for the most part.
Well, when you think it's not only the cost of the additional duty or tariff, you know, whatever it ends up being, if the companies do decide to begin manufacturing some of the parts or the cars or whatever in the US, there's also the cost that they need to put forth to build the facility. It's not like a manufacturing facility for anything can be brought up in 2 months.
Right.
This is a years long process that is millions and millions of dollars.
Billions.
But yeah, but it's like
billions.
It is insane. And then you have to staff you have to train and staff the facility. It is very challenging, at least in the parts of the industries that I have awareness of, to staff factory jobs. There's a lot of turnover, which is not highly there's a lot of things that go into this. Lots of things. It's not just flip a switch and then suddenly we're making a bunch of stuff.
Correct. And that's where so many thoughts in relation to that. One, that's where this could be temporary. Trump is a big fan of the flip a switch type of action, right? As a quote unquote chess move, at least if you're a, you know, super Trumper, that everything he does is a chess move.
Yep.
If you're an anti-Trumper, everything he does is insane, right? Yeah. This is like kind of an insane chess move. You're like, what's happening here? But you would think that he would say there's a year deadline or 2 year deadline in order to bring a percentage of your manufacturing here. Otherwise you'll be subject to this, right? Instead, it's just boom today, roll it out. That is not winning him any supporters on this tariff for the most part, even among the people who identify with his political ideals. Oh, man. I had so much.
I just like kind of unloaded. I was on a tear. I apologize. Take a moment to consolidate your thoughts.
If the point of this is to bring manufacturing back to the US and or make it more competitive, there's a lot of other ways you could do this besides taxing other countries, right? So let's say, I think in the report, it said that approximately they would expect $100 billion in revenue to the federal government as a result of these tariffs. Well, those $100 billion, at least initially, is coming directly at the expense of jobs. Now, those may be jobs overseas, right? So it's mostly harming companies overseas that are manufacturing stuff. And I guess Trump would say, well, we don't care about that. We are pro-America. You know, this is a very nationalist type order. I think there's other ways to do that. Maybe do away with the unions, right? A lot of the foreign corporations that have manufacturing facilities here do not have unions, and they are far more competitive as a result. Now, that is going to be highly controversial, right? Can't be anti-union. Oh, no, it's they're protecting against greedy billionaire corporations. Okay, I could go down a whole rabbit trail about unions, but let's just take that as a possible alternative to slapping a giant tax on every car imported. Another problem. So it's almost this perfect storm, right? So on one hand, Trump is deporting all the illegal aliens / migrant workers / whatever you want to call them. And a lot of them are definitely here illegally and shouldn't be, but a lot of them are here working and doing the jobs that Americans won't. So you're deporting possible workers, and then you're also saying, well, we need to bring manufacturing here. But you're also driving up costs for the consumers, and we already have a massive skills gap, and some would say a wage gap as well. But like Mike Rowe has harped on and on about the skills gap, where there are not people that are either qualified or willing to work manual labor jobs, trade jobs, manufacturing, stuff like that. So it's like Trump wants to bring all of this manufacturing back, but then he's deporting all the workers that would do the jobs. And then we also have this student loan crisis and this push to go to college and get advanced degrees. So this all comes kind of full circle to, like, I'm not sure what problem he's solving without creating other bigger ones, but taking a step back, I'm not sure that it is a problem that we don't have manufacturing primarily as the driver of our economy. And this goes back to Rostow's theory of growth.
I specifically didn't look this up because I wanted you to tell me what it was.
You ready for this?
I'm locked in.
I had to look it up. I remembered what I thought was four economic stages from my college econ class. Rostow's theory of growth identifies five. But essentially, it's talking about the linear progression of an economy. You start as a subsistence economy, right? You're farming, you're living off the earth, like you don't have a currency, you are just subsisting. And you grow and you move into a growth economy, you move into like an industrial economy, a manufacturing economy, you're producing. And then the final stage of an advanced economy is a consumption economy. Essentially, when you have become so wealthy, and most Western economies are in this stage, you become so wealthy that you don't need to produce, you don't need to manufacture, you are just consuming, right? You're almost like an entertainment economy, which I was just in Orlando this weekend. My goodness, you want to talk about an entertainment economy? That is it. It is an entire world built around fantasy and stuffing your face with food and like excitement and stuff like that, right? Yes, there also needs to be people building the rides and carnies to operate them and all that. But like, America is a consumption economy. And you can take that to an extreme and say, well, oh, man, have you seen WALL-E? Like, that's a terrible thing. In some senses, it is, if like all we do is stare at our screens and like go on cruises and go to all you can eat buffets, right?
Yeah. The version of that portrayed in WALL-E is terrible.
But great movie. National security aside, if we say, well, let's lean into that, let's allow other growing economies who have cheaper labor and have people who are willing to do those jobs and coming up through the ranks, learning those skills, like, we are a global economy. So why not ship manufacturing to China or to Africa? Again, apart from the national security current concerns, if we're fully dependent on a dictatorial economy who has a crazy leader who wants to, you know, destroy the world, that is a problem. We have to have, you know, a mix of both. But like, why this push for manufacturing. Like the workforce doesn't exist. I don't know if we even need this.
Yeah. And all it's going to do as we're kind of bringing her back around to the thing I put the pin in is, you know, I'm going to be living the experience of trying to buy a late model used car. I'm going to have to go to a car dealer, Doug. I haven't done this ever.
So this is for your girlfriend.
Yes, for my girlfriend. Right. So she needs...
You're shopping normal cars, late model.
A normal car. She already knows what kind of car she wants. I didn't need to approve it, but I think she's got good taste, so we're all good there. But it's going to be going to a normal car dealer, looking at a normal used car that's a couple years old. It's going to go up in price. I guarantee you that in this realm of the transportation of the normal cars, especially the late model used, everything is going to increase. Absolutely. I don't know if I believe it's going to be all, you know, a full matchy matchy 25% each way or whatever it ends up being, but they're going to have to, because you're shifting cars into potentially different price brackets.
Correct.
And now people are going to be like, well, I want the used one to save some money, which is just going to drive up the demand for those.
Rising tide lifts all ships / trickle down.
Yes.
Effect.
So all the Honda Civics and all the Toyota Camrys and all the everything is going to get more expensive. And honestly, cars are already expensive.
They're very expensive. Like, and let's camp on that for a little bit, right? So new cars are already not selling super well because the manufacturers, kind of too little too late or too much too late, raised MSRPs on cars to respond to the COVIDflation. But they did it after that had happened, when the market was already correcting. So then you like reverse this supply and demand inequality and flipped it to where all of a sudden, like, people are going, man, I'm not paying for that, which drove the used car market high already. I talked to a big dealer group last week, a friend of mine who's a buyer, he said they were 200 cars short on their used car inventory of just like where they're supposed to be. The used car market was already hot. The wholesale black book market went up last week prior to the tariffs. Now they're just going to go up more.
You know, this is kind of weird because at the end of last year, we submitted our cars to Carvana. I still get emails from them and they're like, your Volvo went up $4,000. And I'm like, holy crap.
Well, but they start at like $2,000.
Yeah, yeah. So it was trash. But I was like, whoa.
They're just coming up to reality.
That's going
to
be my barometer, is the Carvana updates on the values of my cars that I entered 6 months ago.
Carvana's stock is going to go up again. They've been dealt another friggin', you know, lifeline. Not that, I mean, whatever. Depending on where you stand on that, they didn't need one. But so used cars definitely going to go up in value, especially late model. I think it's basically going to be a graph, right? So like new cars are going to be affected the most. What it's probably going to do in the short term, obviously dealers are just going to sell out of their stock. Car dealers that had a lot of inventory are finally going to be able to sell the stuff they couldn't sell before. And then slightly less, you're going to have late model used cars going up in value to basically say people are not going to pay the premium for the cars coming in under the new tariff. Now, some manufacturers have announced that they're going to absorb some of it. Ferrari on the high end of things said they're going to absorb 10% of it and pass the other 15% on to consumers. Ferrari can do that. They made record profits last year.
I think they're doing all right.
Yeah. Porsche is not necessarily in quite the position to absorb that. So, and probably a lot of other manufacturers aren't. Stellantis, right? But a lot of manufacturers, according to our source, Chris Benby, a lot of them are taking a wait and see approach, because I think a lot of them are essentially thinking, or they're calling Trump's bluff, going, this is an action to make us move our manufacturing or take certain action or to get other governments to drop their tariffs or whatever. And it's not going to be a permanent thing. So if you didn't buy a car before last weekend and you were in the market, you should probably either buy one today or wait like 6 months, depending on what you believe, because I think the initial reaction is going to be the strongest reaction, and then things will settle out and work their way through the market. Like 10-year-old used cars, again, they'll be impacted some because as newer used cars go up in value, people will buy older cars. But I think it's going to be a graph of like the older you get, the less the car will be impacted by value.
Well, we're going to find out because I am looking at both new cars and old cars at the moment for different reasons. And I do think that the, you know, a lot of people, and I think we touched on this in the last episode, that a lot of people are wondering, do I just buy a car now or should I have bought one 5 days ago or whatever? I think the same logic should apply is that if you are not ready and you don't need to, then don't. Don't make a rash financial decision, in my opinion, even though this isn't financial advice technically, but in my opinion, I wouldn't make a rash financial decision out of fear of this. But if you, like in the case of my girlfriend, she kind of needs a car. So we're going to see how this goes. Like if it becomes ridiculous, we're probably not going to make a move and we'll, and you know, she'll like maybe put some maintenance money into her current car, but it's kind of almost a need at this point.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens.
Yep. Yep. I don't think used cars are not going up 25% in value overnight. Good stuff. Another great quote by Chris. Good stuff is going to be impacted upwards. It's going to go up. And he said, this is not a direct quote, but he said, like, turds are still going to be turds. Like, yeah. People, a $5,000 car is not going to be $7,000. It's still a junker. And I, not to call my customer's car a junker, but we're working a trade deal for like a 2019 or 2020 Camaro. And it's an okay car. It's a V6. It's got some body damage, whatever, low miles. And I'm getting the same numbers on trade as I was 3 weeks ago when we first started talking about it, right? And I'm like, oh, tariffs, you know, it's a late model American car.
Yeah.
Nope, nobody cares, right? It's still just a Camaro with some body damage. And like, it really practically hasn't impacted stuff drastically, but it is certainly putting a choke on the overall supply. And that will impact demand if you believe in basic economic theory. All right. Well, we've hammered that nail in the coffin of the dead horse to
there mix it is.
Lots of metaphors.
Yeah.
I like my metaphor shaken, not stirred. Okay, let's do, I've modified the Shrewd Negotiator segment. No, we'll call it just a new segment. We're going to call it advice people shouldn't ask for on the internet.
Oh, I love this. Let's
but they
go.
Do anyway. This is from the car club where everyone acts like millennials post, although probably also big Altima energy because it is an Altima coupe. This person posts. I was door dashing. My app was messing up and it caused an accident. I rear-ended someone. I had repeatedly reported my issues with the app before the accident. Is DoorDash liable for my car repairs? My insurance denied.
Oh, did they now? Shocking.
I mean, one, you shouldn't post this on the internet that you were
using a phone while you were distracted driving.
Yes, your app did not cause your accident unless you were looking at it. But this is something you should ask an attorney, not the internet.
I feel like you might get laughed at.
Oh,
then you find a really crooked attorney and they're like, oh, no, sure, for sure, bud.
The bigger problem with asking for advice like this on the internet is that people will give you very strong opinions as if they are CPAs or attorneys or other things that you were required to be licensed in order to give that advice. And yet people on the internet, I see tax advice all the time on the internet that is just ridiculous and wrong. And it's just, it's nuts.
Did OP get dragged? Like they were finna get?
OP finna get dragged, yes, but also got some very well-meaning and terrible advice.
This episode is brought to you by Sheffield All Sport Watches. The Sheffield brand was recently revived by Jay Turkbus, an owner of an original Sheffield All Sport diver he received from his parents in 1970 when he was just 11, beginning his love of watches. As an adult, Jay used his extensive expertise in product development and marketing to revive the brand that started it all. He set out to develop watches with a high level of quality and specification at a value price.
His first effort, and a successful one in July of 2023, was the debut of the Sheffield All-Sport Diver 1. It had the kind of build and movement that much more expensive watches use, and his debut price of $108 was equivalent to the $13 his parents paid back in 1970. Since that debut, Sheffield has expanded to a wider range of automatics and chronos, many designed around vintage Sheffield dials of the 60s. The Sheffield well of clever and unique design remains his inspiration, as well as maintaining the goal of high quality, very affordable range of automatic and quartz watches. Sheffield watches, value on merit, not just price. I love mine. Get yours at SheffieldWatches.com and mention that you heard about them on Switchcast.
This poor car.
This poor car.
Sold it to me for way less than it sold in P Car Market. I'll drive the pants off of it.
Oh, man. This poor car, indeed. I did not think that it's... almost 4 years since we started talking about this mint green GT3, almost to the point where I feel like I don't have to give a summary anymore. But for people who are watching this video for the first time, there's a 2018 GT3 in paint to sample mint green that lived a very hard life. It had a wide body conversion. The seats were removed. It appeared that a homeless person was living out of it. The wide body conversion was never finished, actually. It was under construction. It got repossessed, went through wholesale auction, got fixed not very well, but then was tried to be sold off by dealer after dealer after dealer, claiming that this car was, well, mint. No pun intended.
They weren't technically lying.
Yes. And everyone got called out on it and then tried to dump it to another dealer. And
didn't you call a bunch and say, hey, did you ever Google this VIN? One of them was like, nah, bro.
Yes. So many dealers got called out and they all seemed surprised at the history. And then it mysteriously disappeared from their website in most circumstances. However, it finally ended up at a dealership in Boston, Massachusetts, Pinnacle Imports. And when they got called out on it, after the initial defensiveness, they said, oh, well, we're going to own the history on this one. We're going to put it on P Car Market, which is an online automotive auction site. We're going to auction it no reserve. And we're going to have Doug come talk about the history and like spin it a little bit like it's actually a cool thing, which, I mean, it kind of is if that's what you want. Like, if you want to brag at Cars and Coffee, like, hey, you got paint to sample GT3. So what? Mine had a homeless guy living in it. Like,
and didn't they fix it like properly?
No. Okay, so let's talk about the auction.
I'm so sorry. Ethan cut the tape.
Let's talk about the auction itself. My goodness. So I'm thinking, like, finally, this has come full circle. And somebody is going to own this car with full transparency, knowing the history, going to pay fair market value as determined by a no reserve public auction with open commenting. And it's going to be wonderful. Holy moly, was I wrong. Okay, so
I didn't follow this that closely. I was just living in blissful ignorance, Doug.
It started out okay, right? So the dealer who sold it did strip the car down and repaint it again because the paintwork was five shades of green.
Not minty.
They did a pretty good job. It was not perfect. There were some flaws, but whatever. It was far better than everybody had said it was previously in the photos I had seen. So halfway through the auction, a user by the name of Bobby Koss, who we're going to assume is Bobby Koss, started commenting on the condition of the car. Now, I also messaged somebody by that Instagram username on August 4th, 2021, because I had reason to believe that he had bought the car from the original repo auction. So he had bought it in the half-done wide body condition and he had fixed the car. Well, this person by the same username, they saw my message but did not respond to me on the message I sent August 4th, 2021.
Left you on read.
Let's assume that the Instagram user Bobby Koss is the same as the P-Car Market Bobby Koss, right?
I think that's a pretty easy connection to, it's a safe assumption.
Listen, I'm just CYAing here, okay?
Look, I'm no detective, but damn it, Bobby.
He started weighing in on the P-Car Market auction, and I don't have it in front of me, so I'm not going to read direct quotes. I'm going to summarize the absolute downturn of this auction. So Bobby basically says, man, this car had frame damage and like it was fixed really badly, and there was prior damage from an accident to the rear quarter, and we had to do all this Bondo work and undo all this Bondo work, and basically just like it was a bad repair. He was the one that did it. And he said, you know, I bought the car from the Manheim Riverside auction, and then I sold it again via Manheim in 2021, in August of 2021. July of 2021. And he claimed that he disclosed the structural damage, which was essentially the wide body kit, because they had cut the fenders, but they were replaced with new fenders, but also that they cut into the some part of the structure underneath the doors in order to affix the wider rocker panels. So he's knocking his own repair. But then people start to get his repair conflated with the current repair. So it got really, really confusing in terms of like who was commenting and talking about the condition and when they had seen it and whether or not it was before the most recent paintwork or after, because it just got confusing. So Bobby also said that he didn't answer previous questions about the car because people were just out to essentially disparage the car, to troll the car, and obviously talking about me. That's why he didn't respond to me. So 4 years later, he finds the need to post on this auction to basically just like tank the car. I responded to him. Well, and then he, oh, sorry, finish his side of things. So then he said that all the dealers after the Manheim auction where he sold it were basically sweeping the structural damage under the rug and sweeping the history under the rug. Now, I thought this was really bold because assuming all these things connect, let's just say this. In May of 2021, during the period which Bobby said he owned the car was for sale on eBay by a dealer in New Jersey. It was presented as excellent condition. The pictures were great. It had a Porsche of South Bay license plate frame and plate insert, and it was described as a transferable certified pre-owned. Yet, whoa, Bobby said that he had the transmission repair or replacement denied because of the abuse that the car had seen by the previous owner. Too many overrevs and dropping the clutch and all that stuff, right? He didn't disclose that in the auction. Didn't say he had a CPO warranty claim denied. He just said, yeah, great car, transferable certified pre-owned. So when he was selling the car, didn't bring up any of this shoddy repair history. But 4 years later, when somebody else is selling the car, he brings it all up in their auction and then accuses me of trolling the car and all the other dealers of sweeping this stuff under the rug. So I, of course, called him out on that, to which he didn't respond. He ended up getting blocked from commenting on the P-Car Market auction. He then made a video and posted it to YouTube and showed all the photos of the repair process that he did.
Oh.
And a video of him in the car revving it to the moon, dropping the clutch and friggin' like power shifting through the gears. And then he put a Mako advertisement in the middle of the video to basically say this was like a Mako paint job. to like imply that, right? But he was calling his own bodywork Mako quality. So he didn't do that for his own auction in 2021, but then he does it for this poor dealer's auction in 2025. So whatever little respect I had for this Bobby Koss character, I have less than zero now. Less than zero. So that just, I mean, the auction comment thing was just a dumpster fire.
It seems like a lot has been removed. So I'm scrolling through it now as you were talking, and there's so much stuff that just seems to be missing. But it is kind of funny that PCR Market had to come in and comment a couple of times.
Yeah.
And say like, hey, your dialogue is becoming repetitive.
They literally stopped all comments for like 2 days. I couldn't even comment. I called them and I'm like, okay, you got to open commenting back up. Yeah. Like, I know what's going on, but like, if you're going to have a transparent auction, have a transparent auction. So it still sold for $160,888, which, for the record, a few people asked what I thought it would sell for. I said $161.65. So I think it's still sold for reasonably fair money given the past history of the car. I was hoping that that would be the end of the story. Well, it wasn't, because the person who bought it was Nash Business Enterprises, a dealer out of Florida who sells regularly at Manheim. And not 2 weeks later, the car shows back up at Manheim with a 2.2 CR. For those of you not in the business, that is a condition report. It is 2.2 out of 5.
Wow.
So if you were taking a test, that would be a 44% that is failing.
Yikes.
Right.
I just wanted this to end with somebody buying it to just drive the snot out of it and enjoy a really cool color GT3.
Yes.
Without telling everybody it's PTS.
Gosh. Yeah, PTSD after this.
For sure, man.
So I've used that joke a lot now. It's good every single time. Okay, so goes on Manheim. It bids to $152,500. I'm going off of memory. It might have been $151,500. But anyway, far less than Nash Business Enterprises paid for it on the PCAR market
that math
auction.
Do not be mathing.
Backing up a little bit, I thought the sale was fake for a second because I looked up the winner's handle, Targa Kid 17, trying to like find out who they were. Found them on Bring a Trailer, or at least somebody with the same username, might not be the same person, you know. And they had bid on a ton of late model Porsches, and the only one they had won was a slant nose 930 Porsche.
Oh.
And that car was relisted because, as BAT said, the winning bidder failed to follow through, and so their account was restricted, e.g. they got banned. So Targa Kid 17 was banned from Bring a Trailer for not following through on a purchase, and then they buy this already storied car that nobody was sure if it was a real buyer or not. So for a second I thought, well, this deal didn't go through, but sure enough, it did. It sold at Manheim for $152,500, and it sold to none other than Cario Motor Cars,
Who
is arguably one of the shadiest dealers in the Highline business in the country. If you look at their Google reviews, they are abysmal. If you look at the Yelp ones, they're even worse. We've had numerous clients share their experiences dealing or trying to deal with Cario Motor Cars, and it was less than pleasant. We've covered a few cars that they've had that were very dishonestly represented. They are on the bottom feeder side of used car dealers, in my opinion. So it would be no surprise that they would end up with this car bidding on a 2.2 CR mint green GT3 with structural damage on Manheim. Well, they didn't have the car long. It did finally go to an end user. It was on their website.
Oh.
They don't post any descriptions on their website. Talk about a CYA. It's just photos and like
this
basic
is the car
details. But it was on a couple Facebook groups. They posted it on Facebook for $180,000. They bought it for $152,500 plus Manheim fees. Quick markup to $180,000. within, I think, 24 hours, they had the car photoed and online. So they did, as far as I can tell, zero recon at all. And, or let's say zero value add.
Yeah, yes.
And they sold it within 24 hours. Now, I had commented on their Facebook post in one of the groups, and I asked them if they were aware of any structural damage or paintwork. That was a lob,
yep.
Right? Because in the Mannheim CR, it totally called out the whole car had been painted and it was disclosed as structural damage. They did not respond. A couple other people messaged me to say they had actually like straight up called them out and either posted pictures or posted details of the history, and their comments got deleted and they got blocked.
Oh.
So it appears that Cario Motor Cars had no interest in transparency based on what we got from this Facebook group listing. They then must have deleted the post in this group because I could no longer find the post. Like I searched my post in the group. I searched all the terms. Like I think they just straight up deleted it because of all the comments they were getting. However, they posted on their Instagram that they sold the vehicle to a repeat customer. I think his name was Paul. They did a little video with him. They pulled the, you know, velvet sheet off of the car and he traded in a Huracan that he had previously bought from them, you know, so he was a good customer. So they thought, you know, why not pawn this one off on him? But, you know, maybe he doesn't care. Maybe it's just fine because he loves the car.
Yeah.
And which I hope car business for you.
I'm just going to imagine that somebody is enjoying this car as it is, as it should be enjoyed, and that the drama will not resurface in 6 months.
Well, he's probably going to end up trading it back into them because he's a repeat loyal customer. So we'll see Cario Motor Cars having this mint green GT3 up for sale again in a couple years. Excellent condition. Oh, it never ends. I tell you though, I've done, what, 6 podcasts on this stupid car? I'm kind of over it. I'm sure all of our listeners are over it, too. But I feel like I could write an entire book on the car industry based solely on this car's journey. Like an entire book on, like, you could learn everything you needed to know about the dark side of the car business just following this mint green GT3 serial number 5170.
This poor car.
It never ends. I really, really wanted somebody to get the car who knew the history, who was excited to own the friggin' double wide, double mint. That's it. That's it. It's the double mint. It was a double wide. The double mint GT3. That would have been a great plate. DBL MINT. Not to be. Okay, anyway, it's time for the props and flops of the week.
Props and flops are brought to you by Switch Cars, and Switch Cars is the enthusiast dealership where we buy, sell, and consign only cars that we like ourselves. Check out our handpicked inventory at switchcars.com and mention SwitchCast for special pricing. Find more information online at switchcars.com or come visit our showroom in beautiful Twinsburg, Ohio. Now, Doug, what is the pick of the week?
Pick of the week is a Porsche 996.
Ooh,
911.
I like those.
.1, so it doesn't have the fried egg headlights, or is that before the fried egg?
No, this is the runny eggs.
Runny eggs, whatever. Okay, sorry, I'm not an egg nerd. I hate eggs. Okay. It was apparently modified in period by Champion Motors or Champion Ooh. Motorsport or whatever their like modification division was called. It's got their wheels on it. It's got side skirts, aero style front bumper, and it had this like 993 GT2 style rear wing, which looked a little odd on a 996, but I'm like, okay, well that makes sense if it was modified in 99. Like that was the thing. It was kind of a Fast and Furious style thing. So anyway, we removed the rear wing and put the stock deck lid back on, and the wheels I think actually look great with the side skirts. It's got a good stance, but it's Arctic silver over full Boxster red leather.
Ooh,
58,000 miles, great maintenance history, recent IMS upgrade, like 10 grand recently spent in maintenance. So it's pretty much all ready to go. Check that out on our website. Flop of the week. I've always wanted to own, I haven't always, I really like the Maserati MC20.
Oh, they're gorgeous.
They're beautiful.
Like the best looking modern sports car, supercar, whatever. Like I think so good.
Other than the Aston Martin Velour. But
I accept.
Yes. Awesome. Cool. I've never wanted to own a modern automatic supercar, but the MC20 just, breaks all the molds. I love it. However, it illustrates, I think, everything wrong with modern cars or Italian supercars in general. Our friend David Millings from Dry Ice Blasting sent us a video showing a dealership had the entire rear three quarters of the car disassembled, body panels off, fender liners, like the whole shebang, in order to access the bolts holding on the door latch.
You know, I recently had to replace a door latch in one of my cars. You know what had to happen? The door card had to pop off. That's it.
I mean, I don't like popping off interior panels. So to me, that might be just as intimidating because break all the plastic brittle stuff. Like I'd rather do stuff that I can see bolts. I'll take half the car apart with bolts before I will take off a trim panel. But yeah, that's insane. That's
awful.
A door latch failed and it was, I don't know how many bajillion hours. So I think that just about killed that desire for me.
I think I'm good.
Prop of the week. Me and Arnie were down in Celebration, Florida this weekend for the Celebration Exotic Car Festival. It's a really fantastic event put on by a whole host of volunteers and the Jeff and Jim Ippoliti. And Jeff owns the original, like the actual Cannonball Countach from Cannonball Run movie. He owns the Diablo from Dumb and Dumber. But more importantly than the cars, it is entirely a volunteer run event, and it is to raise money for the Make-A-Wish Foundation. They do a track day, they do a private concert, a couple private parties, a car show, a rally. It was an amazing time. And they raised over $700,000 this weekend for the Make-A-Wish Foundation.
Holy crap.
Yeah. That is how you do a charity event. Woo. Yep. So props to them. Very happy to be included in the event. Very happy to be a part of it. I don't have that kind of cheddar to donate, but I'm glad that we were able to kind of come along and assist and just be a supporting role, however small, in, you know, for the people that have the big checkbooks that can make dreams happen. So huge props to that. If you are in Celebration, Florida next year, stuck at Disney with your family and you'd rather go see cars, it's a great event. Check it out. Thank you for joining us for Switchcast with Doug Tabbitt and Tyler Sanders, produced by Ethan Huffnagel. Switchcast is an automotive entertainment and opinion show, and nothing we say should be taken very seriously. We do not give tax, investment, legal, emotional, or professional advice, and the only licenses we hold are driver's licenses. The opinions expressed on this show are exclusively held by the people pontificating at that moment and do not reflect the values of our producers or sponsors. Our theme music is provided by Emily and Ivory. You can stream their full album on Spotify or SoundCloud. If you like this show, you can stream it in its entirety on your favorite audio podcast platform. Check out switchcast.live for more info.